having one is an AA speaker, and we're going to go with the Al-Anon first. And when I was first asked to do this month, do the sharing this month, and I knew this Al-Anon and AA meeting were going to be coming up, and I didn't have to think about it more than about a minute. And I have a really good friend I've known. I said the mid-70s. She corrected me and said the late 70s. So I'm going to introduce now Michelle.
Hi, everybody. My name is Michelle. My Al-Anon birthday is July 21st, 1993. What's different about that day is it was also my birthday. It was my 41st birthday. So I'll just save you the math. I am 67 years. I will be 67 next year on my Al-Anon and my belly button birthday. When I first came to Al-Anon, it was not the best birthday of my life. It really wasn't. I know I only have 20 minutes. I'm going to set 10 for what it used to be like. And then I'll set the next 10 for what happened and what it's like now. One of my inventories that I did, I think my second inventory that I did with my sponsor was, I went back for some, and she didn't instruct me to do this. I went back to my grandparents. My father's father was an alcoholic, and he was an immigrant from Italy, hard worker. He was abusive. My father was the youngest of many siblings, and when World War II came along, my father had no choice but to either be drafted or to enlist. And he had a friend that said, you know, here I'm going to join the 10th Mountain Division of the Army, and I, you know, why don't you? And my grandfather was not happy that he enlisted. I don't know what he thought would happen. He was going to be drafted anyway, but my grandfather promised him, he said, if you enlist, I'll kill myself. And he did. He drank battery acid, and my dad went off to war. I didn't know either my grandfathers or my father's mother. My mother's father, my father's family lived in Chicago. And my mother grew up in the farms of Iowa with my great-grandfather being a farmer. When my grandmother and grandfather got married, my grandfather gave each of the children a farm. And so it was back in the early 1900s, only men could own farms. So it was his daughter, but the son-in-law got the land. Well, one year there was a real bad storm and a tornado that tore their farm apart. He had to go out into the barn and shoot some animals. It was more than he could handle. But the community rallied for each other. They rebuilt. But what my mother told me was that at the end of the day, they brought out the buckets of beer. And she had never seen her father drink before, but it started the spiral. And he abandoned the family. And that was in probably around 1930 when my mom was 9. Way before AA, way before Al-Anon. My grandmother just had no support, either grandmother. Well, you take my mom and dad, and I think it's fitting that it's Father's Day, you know, to honor the memory of my father. My mom and dad met each other in Chicago. My mother came to nurse's school in Chicago. My dad was on leave from the Army, and they fell apart. I mean, they came together. They obviously didn't fall apart. I fell apart. They came together, fell in love, but you know what? It was a clash of cultures. It was a clash of religion, geography, nationality, everything. But from both families, but my parents were deeply in love. And that's who raised me. There was never any amount of excessive alcohol in the home I grew up in. Always knew where my father was, always knew where my mother was. My dad would be pulling up in the driveway at 4:45, he'd wash his hands, and we sat down to dinner every night. I knew no different. And it was, you know, I grew up, you know, again, now we're post-war, you know, in a neighborhood in the suburbs of Chicago where everybody had the same house, you know, maybe different color paint on it. You know, grew up with one pair of shoes every school year and, you know, a couple new dresses, and we all lived like that. You know, I didn't know any different. I grew up with exactly what I needed, and it was a wonderful childhood. My parents had lots of dreams for us kids. I have another sister, you know, to get an education. Did all that. Life was good. About the end of high school is when I decided my life needs to be a little bit more exciting. And so now we'll skip ahead to another war, Vietnam, and, you know, what was going on in the country then with marijuana, alcohol, LSD, acid, and I was really attracted to people that did that and actually, you know, took part in that. And then, you know, I ended up in some pretty crazy relationships, and the last one that I was in Chicago just, you know, absolutely devastated me. So you know what you do when things are, like, going really bad in your life? You move. And so you move far. And my parents were still alive then, and my dad had a heart condition. He knew that he wanted to move somewhere much warmer, you know, and so forth. And he had a sister in Dallas at the time. And so I had friends that were in the military here, and they said, move to San Antonio. And I go, okay. You know, so I did. I came here, and then I met my future husband. And that's where, about the time I met David and Mary Frances, and I asked their permission to insert their names in here. And some years later, I was at an Al-Anon meeting, and I saw a woman across the room from me, and I think Mary Frances remembers. And I'm thinking, gosh, it looks like Mary Frances. And I'm just like, you know, like the whole time, and I know we're like looking back and forth at each other. Because I would tell my husband, I'd say, he said, I don't have any friends. He only had crazy drunk friends. I says, well, call Dave and Mary Frances. They're like, I really like them. They're like really normal. And look like where they ended up. And which I didn't know. So, you know, I'm looking across the room, and I see Mary Frances, and I'm thinking, no, it's not her. And then, you know, we went around and said our names, and I went, whoa. And I said, what are you doing here? You know, like, I think she knew why I was there, because like David said, I married Wild Man. and I will tell you, there were some good times, you know, but as his disease progressed, so did mine, and it was bad. There were some really, really bad days, and part of what was really bad was I was keeping secrets, which I don't do anymore. I was shielding my parents from that pain. Friends, I almost really didn't have any friends. I had one friend, Sally, that actually drugged me to my first Al-Anon meeting, and she stayed too. So things got real dark, and then guess what? I got that man sober. I want to tell you, it's hard work getting somebody sober. You know, it really is, but I got him sober. I got him sober for about 3.5 years. And I was coming to Al-Anon back in 1980. We got married in 1980, about a month before we got married. You know, one of those crazy things happened. Don't need to go into the details. And I came here to some newcomer meetings and continued coming until I got him sober, because you know what? That's why you go to Al-Anon. You get to get that person sober. And I was fine. And so he stayed sober for 4 years, and then he fell off, and you know what I'd heard and what I know today is that when he quit drinking and he came back, you know, went back out, he didn't pick up where he left off. He picked up where, as if he had been drinking those 4 years. And it got crazy, and it got crazy real, real fast. And it was just one thing after another, tried to get him back into treatment again. By this time, I was in the program, so I think it was, I sat out from Al-Anon for 13 years. It was 13 rough years that I put upon myself. And I came back in 1993, just at the end of my wits, and we lasted another 2 years after that. Meanwhile, I had a child, and that was the reason why I called it quits. And what had happened on that particular day when we split up was My daughter started kindergarten, first day of school. You know the big deal. You know, when you, if you have children, you know, you, the whole family goes and the pictures and the whole thing. And I was teaching at the time. It was my first day of school, so I could not take off. And I instructed, you know, this is how I do, instructed my husband, you take the week off to get him through the transition, get my daughter through the transition. And he was fine. He didn't really like working that much anyway. So on the first day of school, he picked her up drunk. And it was a hot August day, as we all know, and she said to him, I want to go to McDonald's, I'm hot, I'm thirsty, and he was drunk, not having it. And she's screaming, from what I understand, back and forth, you know, and she says, I'm going to call Grandma and Grandpa, who I wasn't sharing any of this stuff with. You know, I know they knew. They did know, but, you know, I wasn't, you know, talking to them about it. And he lost it, and he took the phone, threw it across the room into a wall, made a dent, and she lost it. I came home from school. My dad's in the driveway. You know, he couldn't go in because he would have lost it. My mother was there, and there was my mother, my frantic daughter, and my husband. And that was the day the music died, you know. That's all there is to it. It was the day the music died, and our marriage, it just was over. The next morning, I got my daughter off to school and walked, because that, you know, that was not the original plan, so, you know, I was running a little late, walked her down to the bus stop, asked the little boy that was a little bit older, you know, keep an eye on her, and I waited till the bus left, and the bus drove by me, and there was my beautiful little girl. You know, she had this, I could just see, like, from the eyes up, and she's looking at me going, and it's when I realized how strong the disease of alcoholism is. But he missed that. He missed that. And in our divorce, we split some property, and he defaulted on the property that he got. So I went and filed bankruptcy. And you know what? I didn't do any of this alone. I didn't do any of this alone because people in Al-Anon held my hand. When I went for my divorce, one of my Al-Anon friends walked up to the judge with me. And, you know, I was standing in line. You know, women are going up to the judge by themselves. And I don't know what she thought, but I needed that woman next to me. And she's still in my life. You know, it's just, and I've done that for other women now. It's rough. It's rough. It's rough to divorce somebody that you still love and care about. But I couldn't help. The help I gave was not helpful. It was harmful. I didn't get that for many years. So here I am. You know, I've lost a lot. I've financially raising a daughter completely on my own. We ate ramen noodles for many years. I don't care. I took as much extra work as I could. By the grace of God, I had an opportunity to get my master's degree, and it was partially, mostly paid for by my school district, which, you know, upped my salary, gave me another opportunity to work a second, almost full-time job the last 5 years before I retired. And, you know, we're reading the promises here, and there's just a couple of promises that speak to me today and always is the one about, I know this real well, is that fear of people and economic insecurity will leave me. And I will tell you today that, you know, if you looked at my checking account, you know, it's, or, you know, what I have, what I own, it's not much, but I can't tell you how I live just a life of abundance right now. I have everything that I need. Everything that I want is what I need. And then I just want to tell you a story about the other promise about comprehending the word serenity. Because I shut my parents out of my life, and all they wanted to do was to help me, you know. And so when I got to my dying step and had to make direct amends to my parents, and of course, they were the last ones because they were the most difficult in terms of you know, my heart breaking and so forth. And I made amends with my mom, and then I left, and I went out to the garage. My dad was always fiddling with something, and I said to him, I said, Dad, I've harmed you. I've shut you out of my life. I've not returned phone calls. I've not let you know what I'm doing. I'm not going to do that anymore. Will you forgive me? And he said, of course I will. Of course. Well, it was it's almost like, you know, we were talking the other night, or the other day at lunch. It's almost like a short story. It was a cold winter night in December, and truly was. And so after the amends, you know, because, you know, I was instructed, you make your amends and boom, you get out of there, because there's no opportunities for me to give an excuse. I caused harm, I asked for forgiveness, and left. And so I was meeting my friend Sally, who drugged me to my first Al-Anon meeting, and after the first thing. But I consider the 1993 my birthday, because that's when I got in there and made the commitment. And I was meeting Sally at her son's rehearsal for a holiday choir event, and because I couldn't go to the actual one because I was working. And so we went, and so we were meeting out in the courtyard. It was a crisp, cool, clear, you know how they are in December, just so like beautiful. And my daughter and I are sitting outside, and I could hear the holiday music in the background. I mean, it was just really like, I was just like feeling the peace, people. I was feeling the peace. And Sally walks up to me, and she gave my daughter this cute little Santa hat. You know, the one that was gone, the daughter, because she's just a little bit older, and she just was such an angel to me, and she still is. And Sally just, she said, I went to Dairy Queen, and I bought you a Blizzard. And you know what? It was at that moment. It's my Blizzard story, people. It was at that moment that I realized that, wow, I have peace. And there's no more secrets anymore. There's no more secrets going on. And I was free. And from that moment, life was so much better. It was not for my ex-husband. He, as the result of his alcoholism, he did eventually get sober. He died 9 years sober. But he had spiraled so far down that, and he was a heavy drinker, heavy smoker, and that he got lung cancer, and he eventually died. And I will tell you that David and Mary Francis, I was working then. He was staying with a woman from AA who took him in. This angel person from above took him in and took care of him. And I was only able to get there on the weekends. And David, Mary Frances, David was available. And he went over real often to take care of him. And we thank you for that. We were able to make peace in his final moments.